Hey, everybody. We're in the midst of a few months of focusing on movement skills for climbers. But honestly, I'm not happy with just putting more info out there. So we're making an effort to not only collect the dots, but to connect the dots. And the main place I'm doing that is in our monthly newsletter, The Current. Once a month in your inbox, you'll get not a sales email, but my recent light bulb moments or interrogations of how we've always done things and what we could maybe be doing better. You'll also get the dots connected for you between all of the podcast episodes, blog posts, YouTube videos, and more, so that together we can learn, grow, and excel. The link is right there in your show notes. Thanks for the support.
Maybe don't know.
What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Chris Hampton. Welcome to episode 23 of the Power Company podcast, brought to you by powercompanyclimbing.com. We are 1 year old in just a few days, and it's been a successful year for Power Company Climbing, successful beyond any of my expectations, both in terms of business and even more important in terms of building this community. You guys have been amazing. You've really responded to everything I've asked. You've stepped it up every single time I've wanted you to help out with something, from trusting us to help you with your training to telling your friends about what we do. And I hear it every day at the crags and at the boulders. Someone inevitably stops me and wants to talk about the Power Company, which I'm always more than happy to do. So thank you guys for being who you are and for, you know, being part of this community. If any of you want to help, there are a bunch of ways you can do that. First, you can share us on your social medias. Second, you can become a patron. You can do that at patreon.com/powercompanypodcast. We've got several levels of patronage there and some goals that we want to meet. We've already reached goal number one, which means that this thing stays sponsor free, which I'm really stoked about. And we're nearly to goal number two, which means that we'll be buying equipment to do some new podcast ideas and some live podcasts. And thanks to Tommy Wilson for donating some of the equipment that we'll be using. And we've already started to develop our live podcast. So we're on our way. And last but not least, you can rate and review us on iTunes. And you guys have really stepped up with that, and that's why we've got this bonus episode today. And a couple of reviews recently that I've really enjoyed reading. David Kolchinski says, "This podcast is good stuff. You should subscribe and listen to them all. Then check out the past blog posts, then order an ebook, then train like hell, then become a better climber." I couldn't have said it better myself, so thanks for that, David. And one titled "All Meat and No Bone" from Echez, who says, "Love the podcast. It's great to be able to see further by standing on the shoulders of giants. This podcast brings the giants to you and entertains you the entire time." Thanks, Echez. That's exactly what we're trying to do here. From the start, that's how I've wanted it to be. So I'm stoked that that's what you guys are finding. So please go and give us a rating and a review on iTunes. We appreciate it. And because of all that support, I figured you guys needed a bonus Christmas episode. Even though this episode is pretty much zero to do with training, it's about something that we value over here just as much, maybe more, than progression, and that's community. My guest today, Miguel Ventura of the world-famous Miguel's Pizza, could very easily be considered the patriarch of the Red River Gorge climbing community. Even though he wouldn't accept that role, I think we can all agree that that's a pretty good way to describe Miguel. This was a tough conversation to make happen because Miguel is a busy dude. And but Dario, Miguel's son, who's a good friend of mine, made it happen. So thanks, Dario. And if you stick around after the conversation with Miguel, we'll also be talking to Dario a little bit, kind of getting his perspective of what this crazy life has been like growing up in this Red River Gorge community. I'm just going to jump into this thing because I'm stoked how it came out. And yeah, I think you will be too. All right.
You don't need a costume to be a person. You just need to be yourself. Yeah, so I threw that outfit out and I became who I am today. A pizza man.
I think
the tourism is definitely they're coming out more and more. So yeah, it was, the volume was way bigger. Yeah,
wow. Yeah, I did see a lot more tourists here this year. That was kind of surprising, but it's good because they're here mostly during the day, and then
yeah,
you know, they're out of here by the time the climbers are in.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Or the climbers run them out. One of the two.
Yeah, well, that's like right now, it kind of feels like the old days when, you fed the climbers in the morning and then they would come in at night. During the day, you just kind of laid out in the sun for a couple of hours.
Yeah, totally. So I think it's kind of fitting that we're sitting down here in the gear store right now, like, because this is kind of a new addition. And you've done such an amazing job of growing this thing from its small beginnings into this, you know, world known mecca that it's become. So,
well, I mean, let's get it straight. I haven't done anything like that. I mean, I was available for you guys. I've always looked at it is that, you know, I was here and you guys showed up and I kind of made a place for you guys to hang out.
Yeah.
But I have nothing to do with it besides providing a space. I think the guys that Martin and Porter and all those guys that were, you know, had the vision of developing the climbing.
Sure.
You know, those are, I mean, I just provided a space and I enjoyed it. It was good. It's good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you're being a little too humble in that respect because frankly, you know, this could have just been another backwoods, middle of nowhere climbing area. But you've provided this spot for all these people to congregate and have a base. And, you know, everywhere I go climbing, there are Miguel's t-shirts and Miguel's stickers. And everybody's been here and knows this place. So let's go. Let's like rewind back. Do it.
Talking about that is like when I was hanging out at the pizza shop and Dario was in diapers behind the counter, And Martin showed up, you know, and they started hanging out. Martin Hackleworth, I don't know if you remember him.
Yeah, totally.
And he would show up with some of his friends with their tights and have ice cream. And they would come, you know, a few times after a few weekends. He approached me and said, listen, we really like the spirit of this place. And would you want to open up, you know, we could teach you how to rock climb and you could sell the gear for us.
Yeah.
But that's what really started that. It's like they saw the spirit of the place. That's what anything is successful. It's about the spirit of the place.
Totally, totally.
So that's what started it.
Yep.
And, but Martin had the awareness of that.
Yeah,
he helped. So I give him some credit, you know, because he had the spirit of saying, yeah, this place is cool. They're cool people. Let's do something here, you know.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even know what climbing was before then. I mean, I was totally naive of it.
yeah. And that's, you're right. That's super important. And I think that spirit kind of started way back in the beginning because you were an artist early on. Like you came to the U.S. from Portugal and when you were six?
Is that seven, right? Yeah.
Six or seven? What year was that?
Yeah, that was in 1959.
Okay. And then how early did you pick up art?
Oh, I think it was that I didn't speak any English, so the teachers just gave me some crayons.
Oh, yeah.
And put me in the back of the class. He doesn't know how to speak a word, so we just put me back there, and I started doodling, and then you know, they would give me like assignments, like to decorate the wall or something.
Yeah.
And I started out with that, and just something that art just gave me an escape. Mm-hmm. Because coming from a village where you had nobody there, I mean, we didn't have anything, I mean, basically. So it just gave me, I don't know, just like a direction. And
sure.
And coming to the United States where I didn't know anything, living in an environment that was kind of terrifying, because here we have a village that you're it's healthy looking, you're out in the woods, and you come to a concrete jungle.
Yeah.
And so art was an escape from that.
Yeah. And you were in Connecticut, is that
Connecticut.
Right?
Connecticut. We ended up in a ghetto there that was pretty intense. Grew up with that until I was 16 and was able to have a vehicle to get out of there.
Yeah. And from there, did you go to California? Is that right?
Not right away. I went to Rhode Island, traveled around.
And you were going to go to the Rhode Island Institute of Art.
Yeah, but then couldn't afford it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was the Rhode Island School of Design.
Okay.
I got accepted at that. But
yeah. And so, then when you moved out to California, what was out there? Why'd you go
Well,
there?
I was just doing artwork, trying to be
trying
a printmaker.
Trying to live the artist life.
Living the bohemian artistic life.
Yeah. What's I mean, you fell right back into that bohemian lifestyle here, which is pretty interesting.
I think the climbers all have that in them. They're in a way they're artists themselves, but
totally.
And bohemian on top of that. But
what brought you here to Kentucky?
Well, Kentucky was like I was in Rhode Island and I met Neville Pohl. I met him, and we were asked to take some artwork out west in a big semi truck.
Yeah.
And that we were paid to do this. And
sure.
So we made a big trip out of it.
Yeah.
Went across country up northern California and came down to San Diego. But and that my life then started out there in the art world. That's where I really focused on it.
Yeah.
But art's always been part of my escape, kind of like climbers do climbing to escape some of their things or whatever. But it's a focus. You focus and you let your emotions out, whatever you have, put it on paper or whatever. I did etching, so that was my thing.
Yeah, I've seen some. I saw one of your prints at Dario's house.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to have a Miguel in my house someday.
Someday. So. We can do that, definitely. Yeah.
You should totally start making them again and selling them to
climbers. I still have the plates in my crawl space of my house. They're stashed in a box down there.
Yeah, you should do it. You would be in high demand in this
community. Really? You know, art to me is always... so I play that role of being an artist and loved it, you know. But like we were talking earlier, you know, art becomes like part of your ego, and you go to a party and say, so what do you do? Well, I'm an artist.
Yeah, yeah.
And that got to me once, and internally I felt uncomfortable with that. So one day, for some reason, I was doodling, and this doodle came out with this image that I said, wow. It just inspired me. I said, I'm everything. I'm just not an artist. And that's when I gave up doing art and moved away from California and came back east. And it was basically the drawing of this little cartoon character lifting up like a costume of an artist, and he's going in it. So he's...
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine that
totally.
Image?
Yep.
So he's putting on that costume of an artist.
Right.
And realizing that you don't need a costume to be a person.
Right.
You just need need to
it
be
was
yourself.
There all along. Yeah. Didn't
so
need to
you,
have the outfit.
Yeah, so I threw that outfit out and I became who I am today. A pizza man.
I think you're a lot more than a pizza man.
But I mean, it was inspiring to that you could do anything.
Yeah.
You could be anything. And so that little drawing, I still have it. I kept it. And that was the most inspiring drawing I've ever had out of all the artwork I've ever done.
Well, I think you've carried that on. I mean, when you came here and bought this place, it was just a little shack, basically.
Yeah, it was really. Yeah.
You know, when I first started climbing here 22 years ago, I remember it being just a little shack with, you know, almost no people here.
Yeah, there was nobody here. It was, you know? But again, you just it's like any other piece of work. You start. And you stick with it. You know,
yeah, and just like your art teacher gave you crayons because you didn't know the language and you guys couldn't communicate, you didn't necessarily know the climber language back then.
No.
So you just had these crayons and you're like,
let's paint a picture.
Let's build this thing and learn how to talk to these people through that.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah,
it's
I think that's super, super cool. Let's talk about, just so you know, the people who are around get to know what the history is here. Let's look at, once you bought this place, it was called the Jot 'Em Down Store.
Yeah. From some guy from Cincinnati had started that down here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an abandoned building. We just cleaned it up and started selling ice cream. I mean, that was the beginning of that. Because we didn't have any way of making money. And I was driving all the way to Winchester for work at a horse farm.
Right.
I was raising vegetables for these nice people, really. Yeah. And but so we were stuck out here, and we had to create something.
Yeah. And did it already have a pizza oven? Was that?
No, there was nothing there. It was a gift shop originally, and so we just started. Susan said, "Let's start with ice cream," and then after the ice cream went, the climbers started hanging out eating ice cream. The team from Cincinnati, guys.
All the old traddies.
All the old traddies, yeah. Keith Phelps and
Tom Souders.
Tom Souders, yeah. Awesome people. I mean, they were genuine, awesome people. It's hard to find people like that. But they wanted something to eat, and that's how we then said, okay, well, let's just, pizza's good.
Yeah.
And I've had a little background in dealing with pizza dough, and not so much pizza dough, but just bread making.
Bread, yeah.
In our village, we ground all the flour for all the village. So our family did. So my grandparents were involved, and we had like a grits mill that that my grandfather had built.
Oh, cool.
So we ground all the flour for the whole community. And
would the community come there?
Come there, and then we would negotiate, like, you know, you give us so much flour for grinding the rest, you know, and then we would also, you know, bake bread, and then you could take it, my grandparents would take it to the city and sell it, and they sold whatever, you know, cheese, they produced their own cheese and sold that. So I was around that as a baby, as a child.
Yeah, and so, you're kind of repeating that now on a larger scale. You know, this is the community place.
Yeah,
this is where everybody comes.
Yeah, I only grew up around it for 7 years, but it was an interesting, it stayed with me, you know, it's down deep somewhere, probably.
Yeah. And then when did you, it seems to me that for a long time, it was still just that one little room.
Yeah. You mean for the...
like the pizza place.
The pizza place, yeah. That little tiny space that we held up a pizza oven that cooked three with a stick.
Yep.
We stuck it out the window.
Yep, totally.
that was crazy what we got away with back here then, with an odd house, not a bathroom.
Yep.
It was crazy.
And there was, you know, there weren't all these buildings that are here now, the pavilions and the shelters and... You know, the parking lot was really small.
Yeah. And then they...
and the Love Shack was back there.
Yeah, the old Love Shack.
Yeah.
Porter. All those guys, you know, we lived in it for a year and a half or so while we were building our cabin. And then all the climbers took it over until they got so dangerous because they were using the building for firewood to keep themselves warm in there. And it just got like so dangerous because there was nothing structurally holding it up.
Yeah.
It was kind of terrifying.
Porter
was just
burning his own house down to stay warm.
The Canadians were the ones that were doing that more because all the Canadians came down after Porter put up because they knew Porter.
Yep.
So he invited them all. There were 30 of them out here at one time, you know, living in their vans. And Then they started taking that thing apart. And one day I went in there and I saw just one wall just had little boards. I said, this thing's going to fall on you guys. So I put a big piece of plywood on the door and kept them out, but they still crawled in through the windows.
Yeah, for sure.
And then that winter I said, I'm going to, you know, I burned the, you know, we had the fire department up. And
yeah, I think it was falling apart by the time that I was here.
You're showing up. Like it was on Ed, its, you know, Ed Mack was living upstairs too. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, with
Porter. Ed's still around.
He's still here. Yeah.
Yeah.
he's quite a character.
Yeah. So when Porter came, it kind of started to explode shortly after. Like nothing like it is now, but
no.
Still
yeah.
Pretty big.
Well, he wrote that first.
The first little guide.
Well, no, before that, he wrote that article. Rockin' Ice,
yep.
The Jaws of the Red or something.
I remember
had a shark.
That. Yep. Yep.
It's pretty cool, a shark. And Twinkie was like the big one back then.
Yeah.
It was like the, what is it, 12 something?
12A, yeah.
That was like, everybody had it come from there. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, no place else in the world really has that kind of climbing.
Oh, you know? Really?
It's pretty unique to hear. When did you start adding on? Like,
well, after Porter showed up, I mean, it's like within, you know, 2 years, it just started. People were showing up from Europe. And
yep.
So it got built up. So we started building more shelters. And yep.
You built
the kitchen
out, right? Yeah.
Yeah, built an addition to the kitchen. And
I think one of the crazy things people don't realize is that the basement, you know, beneath
it was a crawl space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was we kept our trash down there.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. And Porter dug it out, right?
No, it was me, Roger, and Kenton.
Oh,
me,
really?
Roger, and Kenton.
Yeah.
One winter we got down there. It was all sand. We dug all that by hand.
Wow.
We went down 4 feet of sand. It was amazing. We dug it all out one winter. And then we asked Porter to come in and show us how to protect that, you know, the structural.
Make it structural, yeah.
Yeah, the foundation, how to protect it. And he came in while he was going by climbing. He would stop in for an hour and give us advice on it. And that was pretty good.
Yeah, well, I think one of the hallmarks, in my opinion, of, you know, a good artist is that they're able to kind of ride on the front of whatever waves are happening, you know,
yeah.
And they kind of create the, you know, for lack of a better word, the image of what this new wave looks like, you know. I think that's what artists do a lot of the times. And I think you were able to, even though you want to be humble about it and give, and Martin deserves credit for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And so does Porter, does everyone who built it. But,
oh God, yeah.
But you were able to ride on the front of that wave and keep expanding for this community that was just exploding year after year after year. And you're still doing it. Every season I come back here, there's something new.
Yep.
And you've expanded to fill the needs that are about to happen.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's super important. And it feels creative. It feels, you know, you were on the front end of the first time I ever saw pizza that had more than just pepperoni, sausage, onions, and mushrooms was here.
Okay. Well, that was all inspired by climbers themselves. Don't give me any credit. Like corn on the pizza was a Krieg.
That was Sam.
Sam Krieg said, we got to have some corn on this pizza. Okay, sure. Let's put it on there.
Yeah. And
I personally don't like it, but corn on the pizza.
Sure. So did you ever get into climbing yourself? I know you...
A little bit with Martin and Keith. They would take me out. I did like roadside, you know, all those little sevens and eights, you know.
Yeah.
Arachnid was... I thought that was my favorite. That was fun.
Yeah.
But I never really took it up as, you know, didn't really inspire me that much climbing.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the art part more side of things.
Yeah.
And they gave me the same thrill. But it was fun. I mean, I enjoyed that time of it that I did the little bit of it and then moved on. You know, it's like anything else I've done with my life.
Yeah, and
I enjoy the moment.
You're so connected to the community here. What's this community give back to you if it's not climbing that you're super interested in?
Well, I just, you know, climbers, in general, the majority of them, they're not the typical everyday, you know, even though they all go to college and they want to go to college and then graduate and have a job. But the ones that are got into climbing, they have something more, a little spark beyond that. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for some adventure in their lives. And I've always felt that way about my life. So, you know, I'm not a cookie cut thing, you know.
Yeah.
I like to explore, and I think climbers have that in them. And yeah, that's what I think I enjoy about climbers. You
yeah
know, is that adventure to be able to, you know, create something out of nothing sometimes. You
yeah,
know, it's
totally.
Like, you know, you have to have that to survive in this world. If you don't have that, then you're doomed.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think this space that you've created here, like I started climbing here when I was 19 or so, and it seems like when I think back, like a lot of my formative moments happened down here. And the time that I spent, you know, reliving those moments and analyzing those moments, a lot of it happened sitting in your dining room or
yeah
sleeping in your parking lot or whatever, you know. So this place feels like I grew up here, you know, and I think a lot of people go through that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what we provide here. It gives you an opportunity to take time out and to look at your life. I mean, because I did the same thing when I was in California traveling. I traveled a lot out there, and I had a lot of moments. I would go out to the desert by myself and camp out.
Yeah.
And look at it, look at everything with a different, without any influence around you, just by yourself. And that's really good to have. And this place kind of gives you that, you know, like the kids can come here, young people, and work for us and take time out and save a little cash to go on a trip. And that mm-hmm gives them a year to go and explore that. Like I did. I mean, I
yeah
do that, you know, even though I didn't go to school after. But it's, you know, it's good to take a little break, look at it, and go back into it. Because you got to go back into it. There's no way you can escape it.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to
no
happen.
No matter how
eventually
you try,
yeah,
you got to go back into it.
Yeah,
you got to be
sure
part of it. Otherwise, you won't be fulfilled if you're not part of it.
Yep. And you get to see those kids come back year after year. Like a lot of them stay here for several years,
yeah,
you know, and work their summers. Even though summer might be the worst season to climb here, they're like, this place is home. This is where I go for the summer.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, every year there's more and more. And yeah, this is their little home for a short time. Not yeah permanently.
Yeah, and that's probably a good thing for your sanity.
Yeah, yeah, not
permanently. That you're not raising thousands of teenagers.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah, but you know what? You've done a great job with the kids you do have. You
yeah
know, Dario's amazing. Sarah's amazing. I don't know Mark nearly as well, but he seems like a cool kid every time I'm
he's
around him. You know, in my mind, Mark's still 5.
Yeah.
So it's hard to see him now and be like, oh my God, how old am I?
Yeah, he just became 21.
Yeah, and you're a grandpa.
Yeah.
You got
3 children,
cool
grandchildren.
Grandkids.
Yeah.
It's yeah, awesome. How's that?
It's good. I mean, I enjoy their space, you know, their time with them, and I think that is what's inspiring me to do art again. You know, leave and, you know, money and stuff, and they could burn that up in no time. But if you leave them some artwork, that's why I want to get back into it.
Yeah.
To leave them some kind of art they can put up in the wall when they can remember you.
Yeah.
After
yeah
you're gone, whereas anything else that's just gone.
Yeah. Well, you've got this legacy too, you yeah know, that you've really, really fostered and built down here. And I remember reading in an article years ago that you said that you were talking about how your kids were all into rock climbing, and you said, my son's a little too much into it. I wish he would run the business more. You know, how's he doing now?
He's doing really good.
Yeah.
He's really,
he's back here listening. So
yeah, there is, he's stepped up to the plate. He knows what he's doing. He's very creative like me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think it just takes time, you know, a little bit of, I think it also my wife needs to give him more freedom to do it more.
Yeah.
Poor Susie.
Yeah.
She's not totally comfortable yet.
She's not comfortable letting go of the reins.
Yeah, the reins.
That's tough to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's hard. How are you handling it?
Awesome.
You're just ready to hand them over.
Yeah.
You're like, Dario, take this thing. I don't want it.
I think so. I'm ready.
Well, I think you're in a good spot. You know, you get to see all these kids you've essentially raised. You know, they've all grown up under your roofs. And, you know, now you've got grandkids you need to enjoy. And
yeah, the little things that...
good idea to hand it off.
Yeah. It's at a point that it's grown enough and it's kind of maintaining itself pretty well.
Yeah.
So it's really good. And the whole thing, too, is that Dario's always been, and Mark, we raised them with a spirit of, that we're all, we have like some merit, all people have merit, and to treat everybody with that, with a certain, respect or something, that we all need to respect one another and stuff. And that's the way, it should be. I've raised them that way. And I think they do that.
Yeah. I think they do as well.
Yeah.
And, it's been pretty cool to watch Dario. So when I first started climbing here, he was pretty young.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to watch him become such a part of this community and a pillar in this community, really. I mean, everybody knows who he is. He's a stand-up guy in every situation and everybody respects him. I don't think I'll ever hear a bad word about Dario, because I think he's just a super good guy and everybody realizes that. And that's in no small part because of you. That's
right.
What you've done here and building this community was huge for him as a kid.
Yeah, you have to. But one thing I've learned about all that too, in life there are two types of people. There are givers and there are takers, and you have to know who you want to hang out with too.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
That's so important because you could run yourself down. So it's got to be a balance.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to teach that into them.
Yeah. Well, that's really great.
That's one thing that has to be learned.
Yeah. Good.
Well,
before we wrap this up, what's your like craziest standout Miguel's story? What do you remember happening around here that was the craziest thing you remember?
Probably a lot, but
other than the Spencer Victory fireballs.
What was it for Thanksgiving or was it, maybe it was Halloween, our first Halloween, I think. I don't know if you heard this story. There was two drag queens showed up.
No.
Dressed in really hot clothes. And I really thought they were women. And they were underneath, you remember the old basketball court?
Yeah.
They were under there they were like, they wanted a party or something. So somebody told me, there's two ladies here, they want a party. And I said, well, what kind of party they're into? So I go over it and I said, what's going on here? What kind of party you're looking for? And they said, oh, we just want a party. And it says, we know Miguel really well. And he said, we can hang out here and party and stuff. And I said, oh, that's cool. You know Miguel. And I kind of just let it go, and I just said, well, this place here, these climbers, they're not much into partying right now. They climb all day, they're tired, they're burnt out.
Yeah.
And they just go to bed. So, okay. So, and they just moved on. It was really funny. That was interesting.
That's
day.
Hilarious. Well, there are rumors that you don't actually exist.
Oh, really? That's good.
Because you're not around during the day.
That's
good.
Well, let's do it. Keep it up.
I've heard the rumors that Miguel's isn't actually a real person.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. I made that drawing up. With the, I don't have any hair anymore. Any blonde hair anymore.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you sitting down with me a ton.
Cool.
And congrats on another successful
season.
Well,
I've always enjoyed you, Chris. Thank you for
I'll be back. This.
I've always enjoyed hanging out with you, and you've always been a motivation to me, especially with your artwork, too. So.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, thanks for sitting down with me. I'm going to have a Miguel on my walls eventually. So
we will. I'll definitely. I have plenty. I need to get those plates out and print some, a small edition or something, and pass on some to you. I will. I'll definitely do that too.
Yeah, I would love it.
I like to.
Maybe one of the, once we get a house built in Wyoming, once we're officially moved, we'll maybe I'll see if I can get you to carve something for me. And
That would be reasonable. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
You just have to tell me what you want.
Yeah, I would love to buy a carving. So.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks, Miguel. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Wow. I definitely owe a great deal of gratitude to Miguel for fostering this community that he has, because it, you know, becoming a part of this community really changed my life in a pretty dramatic way. So huge thanks to Miguel for sitting down and talking with me, and man, hearing the story about the drawing and, you know, this costume he realized he was wearing, that's really powerful. And I think it takes a great deal of maturity to realize you're in that place and to try and shed that costume. And it's kind of something you might struggle with for quite a long time, and you really reach a really great peaceful place when you are able to shed those clothes. And it's pretty cool to see what Miguel's done with that. And next up, we've got Dario Ventura, Miguel's son, who's now basically taking over the business. And he's become, like I said, a pillar in this community. And Dario's been a friend of mine for a long time. So stay tuned. And after the commercial break, we will talk with Dario. What's up, everybody? Chris here. Pardon the interruption. I'll keep this short and sweet. Since this podcast started taking off and we've been growing it, you guys have been asking how you can help out. I've got three ways for you. Number one, you can become a patron. That just means you give a monthly donation to the podcast, $1 and up, and you get something in return. And you can check out what those rewards are at patreon.com/powercompanypodcast. Best of all, we'll keep it sponsor and commercial free for you. Number two, you can rate us and review us on iTunes. I know it's a pain in the ass to go to iTunes and do all that, but it really helps us out. At least that's what I'm told by the podcast powers that be. And number three, perhaps the easiest way and the best way to help us out is to share us on your social medias. Anytime you see us post up a new podcast, please share it with your friends. Tag people who will really appreciate it or who need to hear the advice that we're giving. All right. Thank you, guys. And back to the show. Right. Man, that sucks.
Oh, I know.
All right. That's what you get for helping people.
Well, your dad, you don't have a choice about that.
Man, so I just want to get your perspective. Like, as you know, when I first started climbing here, that was 22 years ago. How old are you now?
I'm about to be 33.
So you were like an 11-year-old at the time.
I had a sick bowl cut.
You did have a sick bowl cut. That's awesome. What was this place like for you as an 11-year-old, or as a, you know, even younger? Because Porter and Snide and all those guys were around before I got here.
I guess it was like, I was homeschooled, so I was here a lot. And so I spent a lot of time just hanging around them on rest days for them. So I guess for me, it was just like having a playground of extremely old friends.
Extremely old and nutty friends.
Yeah, and crazy. Which I think in turn made me feel pretty comfortable around most people, because they're an odd crew, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're homeschooled and, you know, especially in a community like this where it's backwoods Kentucky, basically, that could lead to not being very social, not understanding how to move through a community. Mm-hmm. But those guys kind of took you under their wings, if I remember right.
Oh, like, yeah.
When I first started coming down here, you were like the cool, popular kid. Everybody was psyched when you were around, you know? So having all those friends from all these different places all the time, you know, I think you've, I just told your dad, I think you've become this really important part of the worldwide climbing community, really. Everybody knows you and everybody respects you. And I think that's, you know, in partially due to that upbringing here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I feel very fortunate because like you said, like even when I went to regular school and like kind of got out of my climbing bubble.
Yeah.
Then I got to feel the side of like, no one knows you. I was not the cool kid.
Right.
But no, I feel fortunate because I think that I was very cultured for living in a very uncultured area.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I guess that's contributed to, you know, what my dad started in this whole thing, but lucky.
Yeah.
Lucky is the best way to put it, I guess.
Yeah. And I've watched you gradually kind of start to take the reins of the business and, you know, continue this thing that your dad's been doing. And I admire that he's, and I have admired this for years, that he and you and everybody here kind of grows it with the community. Like you guys seem like you're right on the front edge of knowing what the community needs and then providing that before we even know we need it.
Right.
And I think it's cool that you're taking that over and, you know, and continuing to grow it.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have one, if I think it's easier for us maybe, and I don't know if we notice it on purpose because we're just so in deep in like the climbing community and dealing with the people every day that like the needs are not necessarily like, you know, I always talk to people and they're like, so how did you plan this out? Or how did you, you know, how did this come about? And I don't think many of our plans come about that way. It's more like it becomes a necessity. And then we're like, well, this is what needs to be done next, which is kind of like a never ending spiral tunnel because there's always something next.
Yeah, sure.
But,
and this place just keeps exploding.
Exploding. Yeah. So, but I mean, now it's come to a point where it's like, you know, now we're just kind of like, whoa,
yeah,
this place is crazy. But who knows? I mean, I think my dad's always assumes sometimes that maybe it's the need is not there, but we'll still provide it. But then every time we assume that, the need is filled. So it's kind of like, we're always kind of like surprised and people are like, why are you surprised? We're like, I don't know. Maybe we're too humble or I don't know what the deal is.
I think you are. I think both you and your dad are like humble almost to a fault. Like,
yeah. Sometimes I think we should
be. You both want to give credit elsewhere and not take credit. And man, I think what you guys do here is a super special, super important thing. I mean, Miguel's, and I know you've heard this term that it's been called the Camp 4 of the East.
Right.
And I've spent a little bit of time in Camp 4. And
Camp 4 sucks.
At this point, I would argue that Camp 4 isn't even quite the Miguel's of the West.
Yeah. Like, Camp 4.
This place is way cooler.
I know. I grew up always hearing about Camp 4 from climbers and being like, yeah, this place is. And then when I finally went to Camp 4 and I was like, sneaking in Russ Kloon to sleep in a tent with me so he wouldn't get kicked out. I was like, this is not, Miguel's is not the Camp 4 of the South.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the history is out there and those guys, you know, romanticized that history and wrote about it.
Yeah.
So it's become this larger than life thing. But Miguel's really is a life size large thing. Like it's real, it's here, it doesn't need the romanticizing because it's true.
I mean, I think, you know, I just think maybe why it's come to that, I mean I know my dad doesn't like to take credit for it, but I think that they believed in, I guess you could call it, the outdoor industry, maybe not just the outdoor industry in general, way before it actually really existed. And by believing it, like, it just gives you a step up because you're like, you're the person that's trying, you know, you just have a step up on everyone, not because you planned it or did some diagram like most business people would do.
Yeah.
You just like are there and you believe and you stick it out long enough that eventually it pays off.
Yeah, that's huge.
And I, you know, people come to us a lot and they're like, so, you know, what's the secret? And it's like, honestly, you just have to like lose money for like 20 years and live really poor. And then eventually it pays off.
Yeah. Just keep believing in yourself, even when it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, even when there are like 12 dirty climbers are your only customers.
Yeah, exactly. And the wait is like 2 hours for a pizza and you're just like, but no one cared, you know, it was just, yeah, because, yeah, I know people don't realize like when we were kids, how poor we really were,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, was there a point as like a young adult when you were like, there's no way I'm taking this business over?
Yeah. I mean, when I left to go to college, I had no desire to do it. I wanted to go to school. And actually, I wanted to go into business, but I wanted to like, I don't know. I think at that time, I didn't even think of Miguel's as a business.
Right.
You know, because it had not really blossomed into what it is now. So, and then I went to business school and then I started learning what they were teaching in business school. And it was like this cutthroat, like how to put your neighbor out of business attitude. And I was like, and I grew up in an area where we were literally the only business. And that, we never had to deal with that, you know, it was just, just like, everyone was just kind of easygoing and I was really turned off by it. And then it almost drew me back to this business because I was like, that's the side of the business I like this family kind of like oriented, like low cutthroat attitude, you know, it's just like, yeah, it turned me off.
Yeah. And you've now, you know, you've got Cedar, your daughter, you're married and Emily's amazing. And, you know, your family is here. Like you guys, you moved down here to the same area and are continuing this business. And, you know, so you must have turned that corner and feel really good about this place now.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I wouldn't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
And and it's awesome. My wife, she loves climbing and it's perfect for us. And
yeah, there was a while there where I wondered if you would continue climbing.
Yeah.
Like I was curious about how you saw it being pretty much the only true local down here.
Yeah.
You know, and no other locals here climb.
Right.
You know, I thought, oh, I wonder if Dario will keep climbing. But it seems like it's just gotten stronger over the years. Like,
yeah, I think that when like any kid, if you grow up in something with something and, you know, I grew up around everyone being like, yeah, you need to be a rock climber. You need to like go crush. Like you kind of get overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Now that I'm back here and I'm climbing a lot again, now it really is like a enjoyment for me and a freedom that I look forward to every day. And I mean, I don't know if I'd want to live in Slade, Kentucky if I wasn't a rock climber.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I can see that at the crag.
Like, yeah.
You're definitely enjoying it.
Yeah.
Emily's enjoying it. And Cedar's just the coolest kid to have around.
She's
at
awesome.
The crag.
Yeah. You know?
She comes up with the best names for people, which I thought I was good at, but she's way better. So. But yeah, man, I'm super stoked that you're taking this over and continuing this thing and that you're such an important part of this community. Because I've decided that my life needs to be lived inside this community.
And, yeah.
You know, I'm stoked to be able to be a part of it with you.
Yeah, me too, man. Yeah, it's hopefully it continues. That's my hope. I hope this place just stays good like it is right now for till I die at least.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna go any other way, man.
Yeah.
So you guys have done something special here. So thanks for taking a few minutes. I know Cedar's up with grandma and grandpa now, so
yeah, I got some freedom.
I'll let you have that.
So. All right, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been really inspiring for me to see the way that Dario has built this family, and you know, his family is an integral part of the Red River community, and he just remains a pretty cool guy, and you know, he doesn't let it go to his head, which is pretty amazing to me. Yeah, so thanks to both of you, Dario and Miguel. And I appreciate you guys sitting down and chatting with me for a little while. I know you're busy, especially in the fall, which is when somehow I talked you into sitting down. So I appreciate that. Thank you. And to all of you guys out there, thanks for the successful 2016. Looking forward to making 2017 bigger, better, and even more inspiring. And we'll see you guys there for sure. Anytime you have suggestions, you want to say hello, you know where you can find us on most of your social medias, on the Pinterests, the Instagrams, the Facebooks, at powercompanyclimbing.com. But you won't find us on the Twitter. Why? Because we don't tweet. We scream like eagles.
Maybe don't know. Maybe don't.
It's time to build. Good job. Is the sinister character.